The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. And if you wanted to join the show, 770-5633, 770-KMED on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Mark Seligman's going to talk about the recall here. He's so irritated by the recall attempt on John West. And Mark Seligman's a Democrat. And he's actually, anyway, he wants to go off on it. I'll let him talk. I'll let him talk about that and more. And Bob Hart will be joining me as we dig into the latest fire map meeting yesterday. And Bob Hart, the land consultant guy from Rogue River, he wrote me last night, and I couldn't believe what they're doing with this wildfire mapping program in which the way Bob describes it, I hope I'm getting this right. The whole idea is that they're looking at wildfire risk with one piece of property next to another piece of property, and they are going to have no kind of exception or any kind of dial back of any sort of risk mapping, even if you are totally irrigated. In other words, you can have totally irrigated farm field with nice green grass, hay, whatever it is, and you have a dry property without irrigation next to you, and they're still going to say that you're just as dangerous. If I understand what Bob is saying, that your property is just as great at risk as the other one, even though you have water all over the place and everything's green and it's irrigated and it wouldn't technically burn. I know it sounds nuts, but everything about Senate Bill 762 with his wildfire mapping has been pretty much nuts, in my opinion, all right? Okay. Email of the day, we'll give one to Bob Shan this morning. Emails of the day sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson, Central Point Family Dentistry, centralpointfamilydentistry.com on Freeman Way, right next to the Mazatlan Mexican Restaurant. While you wait, crowns, yep, could happen. They have an in-house lab now. Get your appointment today at centralpointfamilydentistry.com. And Bob Shan writes me, Bill, solution to Shady Cove's water shortage. And he has three suggestions. Number one, have all of the pot farmers rally with their water trucks. Okay, I suppose that would work. Get Marie's and all the rest of them doing it, right? Number two, have the rural fire departments run some pumpers and hoses up from the Rogue River to those affected. Number three, check with the water master's office and re-tap the capped wells that were sealed after the property owners were hooked to the local system. Actually, that's pretty interesting. I wonder if that's I wonder what the legality of all this is, because I'll tell you, Bob, if you ever want to be really confused about what's going on in the world, start going down water law. You know, there are times that I'll sit there and talk with Congressman Cliff Bentz off air about water, and he's a water lawyer. That was what he did. That's his private sector job. And boy, you want to talk about arcane and first in line and second in right and this and that and time immemorial and, oh man, it's something. But I wonder, though, could the rural fire departments even legally dip into the Rogue River? Do they have a water right to dip into the Rogue River? Because you have to have the water right to do it. You can't just throw a hose in it just because you're a fire truck, but if you can do it to put out a fire, maybe you have a water right to put out the fire, but not necessarily to spray water or give water to a property owner. I don't know. But, you know, there's probably some rule that says they can't do it. Some environmental rule, I would imagine. Now, as far as going to the wells that had been recapped or something, that sounds like that was something. That's still the water right, I guess. Okay. Pot farmers? Yeah, that would always be great. Okay. It's 7 o'clock. Let me head to the phones here. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Hello, good morning, and who are you? Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Bill. It's Lucretia.
Hi, Lucretia. Oh, I need warning. I haven't had enough coffee to have you come on yet.
Oh, no.
I haven't had enough coffee, but... Okay, now that we played your theme, now we can talk. What's up?
Okay, it's all a conspiracy.
Of course it is. It's all a conspiracy, remember, Hank. You know?
Remember, conspiracy is not tinfoil hat. What it is the con and it's piracy by the global elite. All the scientism that they're giving us, everything we know is almost a lie. Okay? But especially science. Mike Eden, former vice president of Pfizer, had his own very successful biotech lab or firm or whatever, he has now come out not only saying that there's zero proof of virus, but there's over 100 years of absolute trials putting, like I told you, 100 people in a room with, sick people with all sorts of different conditions, supposedly were caused by viruses, or there's pneumonia, or there's tuberculosis, or there's all these other different plagues, like this new one that they're shutting down parts of Massachusetts because of a mosquito, they say, that's causing inflammation of the brain, encephalitis.
Wasn't that the West Nile? Were they having a West Nile there, or is that a new one? Because I know they had West Nile in Ohio, too, when I was back there, too, warning us about
something it. Something like that. But they've never had anybody bit by a mosquito that caused it. They're saying that it's caused by the mosquito.
Okay. So you're taking a former Pfizer guy saying, so you're going down the rabbit hole of there are no such things as virus, right? There's no such thing as a virus?
I'm not only going down that. Mm-hmm. You have Dr. Stephen Young, who's a master of science and a PhD in theoretical physics, nuclear, and all. He's saying what woke him up was this. And now he's looking at the whole alchemy, the whole, everything that's been put out.
Okay, so let's be very clear about this now. If there are no viruses, even though I've talked to science who says that viruses are isolated all the time, and it's the reason why we had invented electron microscopes to be able to see these tiny things. And I was taking ivermectin to protect myself from a conspiracy theory virus, apparently, a couple of years ago during. And when you say, though, that people were put into a room with other people who were sick and they didn't get sick, well, some people have better immune systems, Lucretia. That just seems to make common sense to me. Some people have great immune systems. Other people do not.
Right, but we've never identified a virus. You can call over one lady called some 120 different countries, and not one had identified the COVID-19 virus. They had, and what they were told, and this is Dr. Solanko, who is a virologist, what they were told is that literally you couldn't scrape 10,000 people's lungs or 100,000 people's lungs to get enough of the viral component to identify it.
So, okay, all right, well, fine. We have a mystery disease, and it's everything that we think is. So should I go up to every virologist and say, "What's wrong with you, you quack? You quack! What? There's no such thing as viruses. Everybody knows it's no such thing as a virus." Lucretia told me.
Okay, but Bill, the fellow that identified the HIV virus, okay, he said it's not what's causing AIDS. It's what identified is not causing that. They put somebody else with him that said that, but he never said that.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a great conspiracy theory call. I don't know. There's an awful lot of virologists in this country who, what are they doing? Sitting around watching porn instead of actually discovering and going out there admitting they don't have, that there's no such thing as viruses?
They're locking down Massachusetts based on a mosquito.
No, I don't care about that. This is irrelevant. No. You see, this is a huge claim that there is no such thing as a virus. This is no better than that this is a flat earth, that it's flat earth, and that we're just a pancake, and everything you know about radio propagation, Bill, you're just an idiot. That kind of thing.
Do you know where the Inquisition was?
Yes. Okay, quit redirecting. If someone's going to make a big claim that there's no such thing as viruses, there better be big evidence for it. That's all I'm saying, Lucretia.
We have that. And I'll tell you, Stephen Young looked into the whole situation after kind of waking up from, this plague, this fake plague. He started waking up and looking at everything else he learned. Mm-hmm. And one of the things is that he looked into was the flat earth.
Okay. All right. I got to go. I got to go, Lucretia. Of all the insanity that I hear, the flat earth, no, not there. Got to go. Have a great day. It's 6 minutes after 7, but it is Conspiracy Theory Thursday. What's yours?
American Industrial Door.
This is Kevin Wallace for NBC 5 News, your place.
Let's see. I just got done flying across the country a few days ago, and I remember looking out the window at 33,000 feet and when it was clear, not around the thunderstorms, and I'm looking out, several miles in each direction, several hundred miles, I suppose, and then you see the horizon fall away because of the curvature of the Earth. And yet the conspiracy theory du jour in Southern Oregon is about flat Earth. I know there's a big part of that. Of course, I don't know, though. I don't know. Maybe until I circumnavigate the globe, I can't say anything about this. And maybe we are just it's like a big pimple. Maybe what we're experiencing in Earth right now, it's like a big mole or a pimple, and then it's flat on the bottom. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know, Dave. It makes my head hurt. My teeth hurt, too, sometimes.
Well, I've been at 33,000 feet, and I see the same curvature. And then if you tell the flat earther people, well, then how do we have night and day? Does the Earth rotate around the sun, or does the sun rotate around the Earth? And they don't have an answer for that.
Yeah, so, I know. But I know there's a lot. I just can't go there. I just really can't go there. Between that and every contrail being a chemtrail, there are just certain things.
I have a friend that when I asked him that, he looked at me like a deer stuck in the headlights. So that and on chemtrails, I said, well, everything's chemistry, but water vapor, when it condenses, it can turn into a cloud.
Okay, now see, there you go. There you go, Minor Dave. Thank you very much. And now that you have settled the science this morning, okay?
Yeah.
Even now, if you are a bit crazy from time to time, okay? All right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
But anyways, I wanted to tell you about COVID could be a parasite because ivermectin is a parasite drug. And it's very effective on it.
Yeah, well, the reason why ivermectin was effective on COVID-19, or for many people it was, is because it is a protease inhibitor, which is a medicine that interrupts the reproductive cycle of a virus. But, of course, the virus is a conspiracy theory now, so maybe I guess it doesn't do anything.
Right, but you know, we don't need to go all down those rabbit holes either.
That's right. Darn straight. Thank you, Dave. I got to go. All right.
Right,
yeah, it is Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Mark Seligman, will join me here in a couple of minutes. I always enjoy talking with him, and he's going to jump down the he's running for state rep, HD3, but he's a Democrat, actually not in favor of the recall in Joe County. We'll kick that around, too.
This hour of the Bill Meyer Show is proudly sponsored by
17 After 7. Before we talk with Mark Seligman, Chris is here in Eagle Point. Chris, the latest conspiracy theory, not yours, but this is what you're hearing about the Postal Service. Tell me more about that. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. So supposedly the Postmaster General, who was appointed by Trump, the current one,
right,
is changing everything in the post office. And it's all the bottom line is it's all Trump's fault. But mail now will no longer from here go to Portland. From anywhere in the country, it is going to go to Arkansas to a clearinghouse. And it's supposedly already created delays in delivery.
Now, I have heard nothing about going to Arkansas. That's a great claim, though. This is, who are you hearing this from? I'm just curious.
It's from a neighbor, and he's pretty well,
Yeah.
He's researched.
Well, okay. All I know is that yes, indeed, the redirecting to Portland for the sorting and coming back, they're working that right now because everybody's all hot and bothered about it, from what I understand. I was talking with my mail carrier yesterday who was I just happened to be there when he showed up. And I said, have they figured this out as far as the mail sorting and the re-jiggering? Because the problem is that the post office is broke and they're running low on money, okay? And they have big, and they have big legacy pension costs that they're worried about too. So that And I just asked, well, have they figured this out? And he started laughing uproariously. Seriously, it's what he did. So, but I have not heard anything about Arkansas yet. Maybe I'll ask him about that next time he comes by, okay? All right?
Yeah. And it's going to affect the election and everything. I wish maybe there's people out there that can call in if they've heard about it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but I've not heard that one, not sending it to Arkansas. I think they're probably quicker, more efficient ways to deal with it than sending it over into Clinton Town, okay? Thanks for the call, Chris. That's an interesting one. Let me go to Mark Seligman. Mark Seligman running for State Representative HD3, I believe. How you doing there, Mark? Welcome.
Oh, pretty good.
Okay. Now, let us talk a little bit here. You wanted to talk just a couple minutes here because I didn't have time to squeeze you in yesterday, and you were checking in. Now, you're running for HD3 as the Democrat, but the Democrats hate you, so it's an interesting time in Joe County,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, it doesn't make a difference how much I support them on a national or even statewide level. The fact that in local politics, I'm aligned with Commissioner West, there's a lot of tentacles to this. Mm-hmm. You know, it's important for a state representative to be able to work with the county in which they're representing. And I don't have any problem working with Republican like John West.
Okay, well, what do you think is going on here then with the attempt at a recall? It hasn't happened yet, but this is, doing a petition signing right now.
This is a three-legged monster, and here's how it works. And, you know, I've been involved in politics for 15 years. I know the personalities. The first step by the Citizens for Good Government, that are primarily Democrats, by the way, and one of the reasons I'm not allowed at their meetings, is to recall John West. That's number one.
Okay.
Once that happens, they get to pick another commissioner. The two remaining commissioners, whoever they might be, would pick a third. If they can't agree, it goes to the department heads. Department heads will not pick a person that's a fiscal conservative. They'll pick somebody that Citizens for Good Government wants. So you have a third commissioner, and now that you have these commissioners, the next step will be, and I predict this, will be a county manager.
Okay.
Because Citizens for Good Government wanted a county manager, and it lost in the polls. And who do you think would be my prediction for county manager?
Well, it seems like the inside track would most likely be Lily Morgan over in Gold
Hill.
Exactly.
Right. I'm friends with the Republican chairman, Holly Martin, and she asked Lily Morgan, why do you want this job in Gold Hill as city manager? Experience. Experience for what? Here you go. Lily Morgan will move into a county manager job. I predict this if West gets recalled, despite the voters' wishes. The commissioners don't have to listen to the voters. They can just appoint one.
Yeah. That's true. They can. That's something that they could do with a vote of the board if there are enough people on the board supportive of such
right.
a move.
So
okay.
Now I switched the concentration to Lily Morgan. Lily, what has she done? How come the lead, I call it a lead impersonator, how come nobody looks at what she's doing? This is a political ploy for her to get, you know, to be the lead impersonator. And if we look at what she's done, well, she was for warrantless searches of your property, if you're a hemp grower. She encouraged the people to grow.
I know. You had a lot of trouble with her, or had a big problem. I remember you would come on and talk about that. I remember.
Well, I mean, and most recently, as city manager, she's accused of bullying a city councilor who's no longer in the job. She's bullied people in Josephine County. She's bullied people as a state rep. This is a very shrewd woman. My hat's off to her. She's never had a job that's a private sector. She raises taxes. She stringent regulations. The whole marijuana fiasco I put directly in her lap because she wanted to get rid of it, and she did get rid of it. Legal grows in Josephine County on RR5. She got rid of them. And here come the cartels, and here come the hemp growers who weren't growing.
So are you saying that if there had been legal grows on RR5, that it would have been okay? That the cartels would have stayed out? You think here, Mark?
It would have been, no, the cartels still would have been here, but not to the extent that they were. Now they're all gone, pretty much. The people, and what's in the process of what's gone is income that flowed through Josephine County to or every single business. That's over with. This industry is done. And if it wasn't for retirees in Josephine County, that she has always wanted a tax, by the way, their fixed income. If it wasn't for retirees, we'd be like Garberville. Garberville has no marijuana, no logging, nothing. It's a town that is done. And luckily, we have older people here who support this economy. Thank God for them. And I'm actually one of them, and I'm still working. But you know, the Democrats don't like me because they want big government. They want more taxes to fuel the infrastructure.
Yeah, but I also have to say the Republicans don't necessarily trust you either, though. It's like you're kind of a man without a country, aren't you? Or a party?
The Republican, well, you know, when we just stick to local politics, you know, here's the way I look at it. If Trump gets elected, which I hope he doesn't, if he gets elected, it's really not going to affect Josephine County one way or the other. But what will affect Josephine County is higher taxes. I mean, look what people have to deal with. The fire map, insurance costs going up. Every year their house value goes up 3%. The county gets more money. And
but even that's not keeping up, though, with the inflation in county services, too,
well,
though,
that's
county
what
government.
They claim. But what's going to happen if a Lily Morgan type becomes, not Lily Morgan type, Lily Morgan becomes county manager? You know, the theory is, well, that's efficiency when you have county managers. Look at Danny Jordan in Medford. He's untouchable. You never get rid of him. So they're a very important person, and their job is to run the government effectively. That's what they claim. Well, how do you run government effectively? You have the funds. You have the money. And how will they get the funds and the money? By taxing people. So be very careful if you support recalling Mr. West, because you're going to have your taxes go up because the people that they will replace him will be the people that want to, you know, they need the funds.
All right. Mark, I appreciate
monster.
Mark, I appreciate you coming on and sharing some thoughts.
Thank
you. We'll have you back there. Okay.
Yeah. By the way, compliments to you, Bill, because the Daily Courier will not print any letters to the editor by anybody that supports West. And the Illinois Valley News has a recall West in front of their building over the weekend. Huh. So we're stuck here. If it wasn't for you, how would we get the word out? Thank you.
All right. Appreciate the call, Mark. Like I said, politics, strange bedfellows. That's for sure. Mark Seligman, who is running for House Rep, District 3, 726. Speaking of the fire map, Bob Hart, we're going to talk with him about this. He watched one of the meetings yesterday, and you're not going to believe what happened with that. We'll give a quick update on the way.
Of another gutter manufacturing machine has
contact at bicoastal.media.
Welcome to the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
729, Bob Hart rejoins the program. He is a land use consultant. Isn't that right, Bob? Is that your main title?
That's what it was till I retired.
Okay, so you're retired, but still you've forgotten more about the land use policies of the state of Oregon than I'll ever know. But that makes you a great person to talk to about this Senate Bill 762 wildfire mapping issue. And you end up taking lots of time out of your world, and you watched that Board of Forestry meeting yesterday, which was an online Zoom one, apparently, about the latest iterations of this wildfire mapping, which is causing so much heartburn for landowners here in Southern Oregon. And could you set the table? What happened with that yesterday?
Yesterday was the final vote from the Board of Forestry on the rules about the map, how it applies, and all the little details. Everybody wrote in letters. They had a time for people to make comments, and they didn't even discuss any of that. There was nothing mentioned about the citizen comment about the rules.
Mm-hmm.
But the way the meeting worked out, the big issue was whether irrigation was supposed to be a mitigating factor that could change some of the ratings from high to medium.
Well, yeah. And that can make a big difference, because it would seem to be common sense that if you have dry, non-irrigated land next to irrigated land that it's nice and wet and damp and green and lush, that would be a lower wildfire risk. That's common sense, but does that make sense there?
That's the problem. It makes sense, but the board in their discussions, they said, well, what kind of documentation or studies have been done to show how much it really does affect things? And water resource law says to keep your irrigation rights, you have to irrigate 1 out of 5 years to be able to keep your irrigation rights. Don't we want to make sure that people irrigate all the time? So let's not adopt this unless we can prove that people are irrigating 5 years out of 5. So that was the original motion, and that lost 4-3.
That went down. Okay.
That went down. Then cooler heads prevailed, and they said, you know, we're really trying to protect houses. We're not trying to protect farmland. And the maps that show fires over the last 15 or 20 years showed that fire does really stop up against irrigated lands. So there was a motion to approve irrigation as a mitigating factor if the information that the state uses out of water resources and a program called EarMap shows that it is irrigated at least 1 year out of 5, and that passed on a 4-3 vote. So it was that close either way. So now the rules are set. The map will be finalized.
Okay, now I want to understand the vote here. Does this mean that they are going to use irrigation as a mitigating factor, or they are not? I want to make sure I understand the result of the vote, Bob.
Okay. They will use irrigation as a mitigating factor.
Okay.
And it appears from the numbers that were shown that that will affect statewide about 4,000 tax lots.
Okay. All right. So if you are an irrigated land, you may have the possibility of getting a lower rating on wildfire
rates.
Could be a factor. Okay.
It could be a factor, but it's not the only factor. They had the guy from OSU saying, you know, that irrigation is just one of many factors. And if you have, you know, maybe a few acres irrigated out of a larger ownership, it may not affect your overall rating at all.
Hmm. Well, I have to tell you, Bob, this is such an attack on private property rights. The only thing that is going to fix this, though, is an out-and-out repeal. There's probably no way to really fix this mix in the middle of it. Would you agree with me? Because they've been tasked by the legislature, the actual law they have to follow says, you shall have this map, whether you want it or not. We're going to give it to you good and hard. What do you think?
Yeah, the only way is a repeal, because the course correction of SB 80 didn't fix anything at all. Mm-hmm. It just changed a word here or there, but it's the same program.
Thanks for helping us understand a bit of this here, Bob. You are welcome back anytime. Keep us in the room because, like I said, you're a good person to talk to, understands this stuff. And it's very arcane, obtuse, and you can understand the frustration out there. It's pitchforks and torches time, you know, what people are looking at with this.
Right. And the next thing to expect is the letter that will go out to the people in the high area in the WUI that'll be mailed out October 1st when the map goes live.
All right. Thank you very much. Bob Hart, once again, Bob Hart Consulting in Rogue River. Thank you so much. Good to have you on, Bob.
Thank you, Bill.
7:35. We'll catch up on the rest of the news here in just a moment. Dr. John Lott Jr. joins me. We're going to talk about crime, some firearms issues. Certainly have to talk about yesterday's school shooting in Georgia, too.
Join us at the expo for the
20 before 8. Crime Prevention Research Center, founded by Dr. John R. Lott Jr. He's an economist by trade, world recognized expert on guns and crime, and he just looks at the data. He is a data-driven guy, and you can find out more about everything that he does. CrimeResearch.org is the website. Dr. Lott, great to have you back on. Good morning, sir.
That's great to talk to you again, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Don't know as far as motives and various other things here, but another tragedy yesterday in Georgia this time. Four people shot and killed and nine hurting there. And do you have any particular insight on this particular 14-year-old other than the fact that the FBI had him on their radar about a year ago and nothing was done, which seems to be pretty common, a lot of common occurrence these days?
No, unfortunately, it's all too common. You know, there are lots of these mass public shootings and obviously school shootings. I mean, Parkland and others come to mind, where law enforcement had strong reasons to suspect the individuals beforehand. But look, you know, to me, one of the important things is that this was yet another mass public shooting at a school where you had a gun-free zone. I mean, you'd banned teachers and staff and others from being able to go and carry there. Georgia allows teachers to carry, but only if the school boards approve it. And this was, there's only three school districts in the state, three counties that have armed teachers. And, you know, you look since 2000, we've had nine mass public school shootings now, and all of them, as well as any type of shooting at a school where anybody's been injured or killed, have occurred at the schools where guns are banned. You know, you look at this, and there are literally over 10,000 schools in the United States which have armed teachers. We have 20 states that have allow armed teachers, and, you know, in some of the states like Utah and New Hampshire, any teacher who has a concealed carry permit is allowed to carry. You've had a good law in Oregon, but the teachers unions and school districts have gotten around it in terms of the contracts that they have with the individual teachers.
Yeah, by contract, they tell them that you're not supposed to. You know, it's interesting, though, that that you bring this up because, yes, you can't carry. Well, you can't carry. Legislature ended up taking a dive and started reducing the sensibility of Oregon's concealed carry law. And now school districts can prohibit concealed carry people from carrying on campus if they wish, if the board wishes to. Medford has not done this. I think Southern Oregon University did. And it's quite interesting, though, but teachers have reached out to me on the sly and said that, well, we don't care if our contract says no carrying concealed in our contract, even though it's allowed to by law, that they carry anyway. They just make sure and keep it carried because they want to be able to fight if there was a problem. They just do it.
Thanks. Look, anybody who's read the diaries or manifestos for these mass murders know that time after time, even if the media refuses to actually report on this part of their manifestos or diaries, explain why they picked the targets that they did. And basically, you have individuals who are almost always suicidal. They want to get media attention. And they know the more people they kill, the more media attention that they can get. And they figure if they go to a place where their victims aren't able to go and defend themselves, they're going to be able to go and kill more people and get more media attention. You know, the problem is these guys may be crazy in some sense, but they're not stupid.
Yeah.
Now, I know we had a school resource officer who stopped the attack, and that's very fortunate. But what people have to realize is what an incredibly difficult job a school resource officer who's in uniform has in stopping these attacks, because the attackers in those cases have real tactical advantages because the one person with a gun is so readily identifiable because they're in uniform. And so the murderer can go and wait for the officer to leave the area before they attack, or they can move to another part of the school.
Or they could take out the school resource officer first. You know, that's happened.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the advantage of concealed carry is that you take away those tactical advantages that that the attacker had in those cases. They don't know who it is that they have to go and take out first. It's the reason I think that, you look at all the school shootings where anybody's been killed or injured since 2000, and they all have occurred in places where, teachers aren't allowed to carry. Teachers and staff aren't allowed to carry. So anyway, those are my basic thoughts on this.
All right. I appreciate it. Dr. John Lott Jr. With me this morning, 7:46. Doc, there was a article you put out the other day. Actually, well, maybe it came out this morning. I don't know. But this has to do with the continuing demonization or the shading of the narrative when it comes to mass shootings and the good guys with guns. And you're saying that the CDC, there's an article you put up on thefederalist.com, CDC and the FBI are working to hide the data, actually make it impossible to know whether a shooting was stopped by good guys with guns. Is that the story, huh?
Right. Well, basically, it's on the CDC and the FBI, their actions. You had the CDC's case during the Biden administration. The Biden administration asked the CDC to go and talk to various gun control groups. And for Freedom of Information Act, the emails between the gun control groups and the CDC were released. And what they show is that the gun control groups complained to the Centers for Disease Control that it had put up on its website research showing the rate of defensive gun uses. And the complaint from places like the Gun Violence Archive, which the media cites all the time, was that that was detrimental to their ability to go and pass the right types of gun control laws. And so they argued that the Centers for Disease Control should take it down. And to be honest, I think it's completely inappropriate that the Centers for Disease Control would even listen to arguments that in any way rely on whether it makes it more or less difficult for a special interest group to pass particular legislation.
Well, yeah, and the fact of the matter is, though, that it was clear that the data that the CDC was putting out is that, yeah, bad people are only stopped by good people who are armed. That's just the bottom line. Right. Well, it's just common sense, right?
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, it was basically the rate that people were stopping these attacks. And so anyway, it was disturbing that when the Freedom of Information Act request got those emails and saw that. The other thing was with regard to the data from the FBI. The FBI puts out a yearly report on what they call active shooting cases. An active shooting case is an instance where a gun's fired in public, not part of some other type of crime like a robbery or a gang fight over drug turf. It could be anything from one person being shot at and missed all the way up to a mass public shooting. And the FBI claims over the last 10 years, from 2014 through 2023, that there were about 300 of these cases, and that only 4% of them involved instances that were stopped by a concealed carry permit holder. When I worked in the Department of Justice in 2020 and 2021, one of the tasks that I had was to go and evaluate the active shooting reports from the FBI. And what I pointed out to them was that they were missing a lot of cases, and the cases that they were missing were virtually all cases where somebody had used a gun to stop one of these active shooting cases. Even when you're able to go and get them to admit that they made a mistake, they don't fix this, even years later. But what you find, I would argue, is that rather than 4% of these cases, it's actually about 35%. And that not only that, the other argument that I had was, look, you got to separate out places where people are legally allowed to carry, kind of like what we were talking about earlier,
right,
versus ones where it's illegal to carry. You're talking about law-abiding citizens who have a permit stopping these attacks, and you can't expect a law-abiding citizen to stop an attack in an area where it's illegal for them to go and have a gun.
Yeah, where they find themselves in trouble. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, but the bottom line is
if you looked at just places where they were allowed to carry, the actual rate of law-abiding citizens stopping these attacks was over 50%.
That's actually pretty good.
Yeah, no, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So I was surprised to see it being that high, but the the FBI was not open to even considering separating out cases from where they were legally allowed to carry versus ones where they weren't.
The other aspect I wanted to ask, Doctor, is that since you were digging into the numbers all the time, Dr. John Lott Jr. with me once again from the Crime Prevention Research Center, is there a when the FBI reports young people being shot and killed through the use of firearms, do they differentiate between people shot and killed by firearms when they are gang members or are involved in criminal or violent behavior and who are just innocent victims, let's say, of something just because they were in the wrong place at the wrong time? Do they break that out at all, or do they – because you always hear this, oh, so many young people, oh, so many youth. You know, you always hear the term on news, Doctor. Three youths were shot and killed in Chicago, gun violence over the weekend. And then when you look more deeply into it, it always ends up being some pretty serious gang members who just happen to be young.
Right.
And it's a little different than it's different to talk about them as victims of gun violence when they're actually engaged in it rather than people who were just walking by in the wrong place.
I agree completely. I think you're exactly right on the importance there. I mean, you're talking about drug gangs fighting against each other
right.
to control drug turf.
Mm-hmm.
And the notion that if I were to go and ban all guns tomorrow, I'm going to stop drug gangs from fighting against each other or getting guns to do it. I mean, they're going to get guns as easily as they get illegal drugs. If you think we've been able to stop illegal drugs, good luck with that. I mean, you look at Mexico. Mexico, since 1972, has had only one gun store in the country. The most powerful gun that you've been able to legally buy in Mexico since 1972 is a 22 caliber short round bolt action rifle.
That's it. But there's an awful lot of guns in Mexico in spite of that.
Right.
Huh?
And you have less than 0.1% of the adult population that's legally licensed to even own a gun. And yet Mexico in many recent years has had a murder rate that's six times higher than the murder rate in the United States. In fact, the murder rate there has more than doubled since they put in those strong gun control laws. So, you know, the bottom line is the drug cartels and gangs in Mexico bring in weapons from around the world just as they go and bring in illegal drugs from around the world. And you'd have the same thing happen in the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, this is if I clicked my fingers and caused all guns in the United States to disappear and all illegal drugs, how long do you think it would be before illegal drugs started coming back into the United States? If you're in El Paso, 20 minutes?
Yeah.
How long would it be before they'd bring in the weapons to protect that valuable property?
It would be the proverbial New York second. Or New York Minute, you know, that kind of thing. So, Dr.
Exactly.
Lott, back to it, though. Does the FBI break out those crime statistics with firearms?
Doesn't.
They don't.
No.
Okay.
No. Even not just for young people, but even for people as a whole. But you're right. Overwhelmingly, particularly for young people, you're talking about drug gang activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And by the way, violent activity tends to be usually a young man's business, right? That tends to be
right. The
way it works out demographically, okay? Is there any call to reform, besides you, is there any push to get the CDC and the FBI to not politicize firearm statistics, especially when it comes to good guys stopping bad guys by using firearms?
Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen, at least nothing in the interim. I mean, look, I think there's a lot that one has to do with regard to kind of political biases at the FBI. I dealt with the data people when I was working there, and it was pretty bad. And so you know, there's a lot of work, you know, if Trump gets in there, he's promising to go and try to clean things up. So we'll see. Obviously, nothing's going to change if Kamala Harris wins.
My point would be, though, is that we would hope that that when the media is going to report on something, that they're able to go and get solid
I know, exactly.
Truth.
Look,
you know,
look, I can give you stories from when the media will rely on these FBI reports to say that, look, it's only 4% of the time that people use guns to go and stop these attacks. It's very trivial. It's not important. I say, look, you don't need to take my word for it. Here are the cases. And I give them all the cases, the news stories, so that they can read them themselves. Because that's how the FBI gets these cases. They hire researchers to go and do Google News searches on these things and compile the cases. And I said, look, here are the cases. Here's their definition. You can check to see whether or not these cases meet them. And the media, the news media, refuses to check. They just cite the FBI reports that are there.
They cite the FBI reports that paint the picture that they're wishing to,
right.
Obviously. That's unfortunate. And then people wonder why so much of the media is not trusted with such stories, all right?
Right, exactly.
Dr. John R. Lott, Jr., of course, crimeresearch.org is his main website. His latest piece on thefederalist.com, CDC and FBI working to hide data showing shootings stopped by good guys with guns. If you're looking for actual good crime statistics, actually what is going on, head to crimeresearch.org. By the way, doctor, before you take off, overall, is there a case to be made here that when governments have been talking about reduction in the rate of crime, or crime rates have been going down the last few years, have crime rates really been going down, or has
no.
there okay and the reason I'm asking
they've,
this is that
it's actually gone up very dramatically.
Okay.
During the Biden administration, violent crimes increased by about 43%. It actually had fallen during the Trump administration. Look, there are two measures we have of crime. We have the FBI data on crime reported to police, and then we have the Bureau of Justice Statistics, which is also in the Department of Justice, which gets a measure of total crime. They have this really, truly massive National Crime Victimization Survey, which surveys 240,000 people each year. And it's kind of considered the gold standard for crime statistics because we know most crimes aren't reported to police. And the problem is, a couple problems with the FBI data. One is, up until 2020, up through 2020, you had about 97% of police departments that were reporting crime data to the FBI. In 2021, the Biden administration changed the system, and we have fewer than half of police departments now reporting complete crime data to the FBI. 31% aren't reporting any crime data to the FBI.
That is a massive, so you end up showing a reduction in violent crime because the statistics never make it there now. They're just not reported.
Well, they guess what they think are the missing numbers. They don't put in zeros, but I think they do a pretty bad job of guessing what it is. But there's a more major problem, I think, and that is law enforcement in many cities, particularly large cities in the United States, has collapsed. You look at the 5 years before COVID, the average arrest rate for violent crimes was 44%. It started falling in 2020. By 2022, it was down to 20%. That's over a 50% drop in arrests for reported violent crimes. For property crimes, the drop was 65%. And so what happens is, and that's just for reported crimes. If you look at for total crimes for those cities, only 8% of violent crimes results in arrest, and only 1% of total property crimes results in arrest. And one thing that we've known for a long time is that the rate that people report crimes to the police depends in part on whether or not they think the guys are going to be caught and punished.
And if they don't think that the sheriff or the police or the
right.
the state police are going to get involved, or even they won't even bother calling about it then.
Exactly. Huh. And so that's one way you can get a drop in crimes reported to police at the same time you have an increase in crime.
Excellent. Well, that's why we have a chance to talk to you. Anytime we get a chance to talk to you, we're happy to do that. Dr. John R. Lott, Jr., once again, crimeresearch.org. Appreciate your work there. And like I said when I introduced you, you are a numbers guy. You're looking at the data. It's not about politics. It's about what do the numbers say. Thanks so much, Dr. Lott. We'll have you back. Be well.
Well, thank you, Bill.
It's a minute after 8. This is KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass.